This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side. And for the first time in a long time, the entire MGO Blog Roundtable is with us. Yeah. Folks, reason to be excited. If you can't get excited about anything else, get excited by the fact the entire crew is here. The entire crew is back. Starting off first with Mr. Brian Cook from MGO Blog. Brian, how are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. Seth Fisher, of course, is back with us as well.
I am pumped up. I'm ready to go. Everything is working just fine.
All right. And then Craig Ross. Craig, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, and I'm feeling better than any of you guys, probably because I spent the last week in bed. So it's good to be back to the quasi-living.
So. Yeah, I hear that, man. Well, it's good to have all you guys back in, and good to have you back in. And we're still talking about a team a Michigan team that hasn't lost a game yet. And I don't know where you guys were in your preseason sort of prognostications, but I didn't have Michigan undefeated at this point. I'm curious if you guys did. And now as we head into conference play and before we start breaking down the Northern Illinois victory, Michigan, relative to your expectations heading into the season, Michigan at this point, relative to your expectations heading into the season, how do they match up, Brian?
Well, I mean, they've greatly exceeded them. So one thing that I've noticed in Seth's OL charting is I usually used to do a percentage for run blocking. And if they got to like 66%, that was really good. And they probably hit 80 in this most recent game, which just the sheer lack of mistakes on the offensive line is something that we haven't seen in a long time. And I think, you know, you're talking about like, all right, we played Northern Illinois, Washington's no good, all that stuff. And I think there are things you can take from these games. And one of the most important ones is that they're not screwing up. So like they installed a new defensive system. And how many guys have you seen like just running wide open downfield? Almost none. And how many defensive linemen have you seen just shooting to the backfield without anyone touching them? Almost none. And so, All football teams have a level of screw up to them, and this one seems to have a pretty low one so far. And so I think that they've exceeded my expectations in a meaningful way.
Seth?
Yeah, definitely. The Washington game more so than either of the MAC opponents. I thought NIU was a terrible team going into the season, and they were pretty much what we thought they were. And the Washington game I thought was a 50-50. I thought that was a flip. And you know, they just dominated that one, and then everything kind of continued the way it's been going. Brian mentioned the offensive line. On the defensive line, Michigan had like some ridiculous scores against Washington, and then kind of came back to earth again. But then the linebackers had great scores again, and that is where a lot of the surprises I think are. I didn't think Nakai Hill-Green was going to be as good as he's been. I didn't think that, as Brian mentioned, that the defensive line was going to be as responsible as they've been. And I certainly did not expect the secondary to be holding up like they have been. Now, caveat, we've not faced very good quarterbacks yet. And when we face quarterbacks who've in the past been better, they've not been very good. So, you know, we did not see a single downfield throw from Lombardi this week, which I thought was just weird considering the history of Rocky Lombardi in Michigan secondary. But every time Vincent Gray is on camera, he's doing fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been slightly surprised. I mean, I'm not surprised that Michigan is 3-0, Although I think Bill Simonson said Michigan would be, quote, lucky to win three games. So I guess Michigan's been pretty lucky so far. But I am surprised at the quality of play. I mean, and that's what's really been very surprising to me, that Michigan would play at this level. Now, Northern Illinois might be a sort of meatball, but they're a sort of meatball that actually beat Georgia Tech, which is, you know,
the not Illinois of the ACC.
Yeah, right. But still, you know, on the road to win a, you know, to win that game on the road shows that you're not completely inert. You know, Western Michigan, I think their quarterback is a good quarterback, and they beat Pitt at Pitt this week. And so even though you might say, oh, Western Michigan, who are they? Well, they're good enough to beat Pitt on the road. And so these teams aren't – now, maybe Washington is down a bit also. But the competition hasn't been quite as tepid as just reading the names off. And so I've been really heartened by how well this team has played so far. And as Brian points out, very few mistakes. We can point out a couple of them as we go along, but really, it's exciting. And so I agree with Vance Bedford. If you can't get excited by this, I mean, what do you need to do? Is that fair, Sam?
Yeah, that's a PC way of saying what Vance said. I was struck in the same way Brian was, by the level of precision along the offensive line. And not just, you know, I mean, getting to the second, blocking guys in front of you or getting to the second level, but really blocking on the move, consistently targeting the right guy and blocking the right guy, to the point where, let's get into this Northern Illinois game. I mean, to me, maybe the most impressive play of the game was Andrew Vistardis on that reverse, getting downfield and getting the piece of safety. I just like, man, for I keep bringing him up because I admit to being one of the ones talking about the possibilities of Zach Zinner was the center. And Andrew, and I was told quite plainly before he was announced captain, you know, before it was apparent publicly that he was going to be the starting center, that, hey, Andrew Vistardis is actually performing well. He's, when things break down, it's not Andrew Vistardis. You might want to slow your roll with that sort of thing. Now I see what they're talking about, because that dude's playing at a very high level.
Yeah. I mean, I knew exactly where you're going, right? And we're talking about an offensive lineman pulling on a reverse. And I was like, oh, he's probably going to talk about that play. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that he almost had another one like that, but he couldn't quite get over because he accidentally got cut off by a defensive end and he had to like go around the guy. But that was another situation where if he's able to like get out there a hair faster, that's a touchdown instead of an ankle tackle. And, you know, that kind of mobility from a center is really valuable. And it's something that I personally did not expect from Andrew Vistardis. And I think, you know, Seth was talking about, like, is this guy draftable? And I think the answer might be yes.
Yes, right.
I agree.
I mean, it's hard to gauge against NIU. But, like, the way that he was performing against Washington's Tuli Ntaki, right? Like, those are a 330-pound and a 360-pound dude, and he was moving them just fine. So, like, the problems with it, like, the concerns with Vastardis were probably based, and he was a little injured last year, and we maybe underrated that. And then I was concerned that there were, like, a bunch of missed pickups, and I can't, and that's not been a problem at all this year. Now, Michigan does not pass very much, so they haven't had to do much patch. They haven't had to set many difficult protections. So, I mean, that might still be out there, right? Like, if Michigan gets into a game where they have to pass a lot, I don't know how they're going to hold up. So I'm trying to pump the brakes there. But, I mean, J.J. McCarthy has competition now for A.J. Henning's best friend, because Vastardis gets out there.
Yeah, man, it was impressive to see. And you could go up and down the line, and we can talk about each of the offensive linemen having moments. As a group, they are exceptional. And it allows you as a play caller to say, look, certainly in a game like this, we can get what we want when we want it on the ground. We're going to work on this passing game. So what did you did you feel like that game was progress for the passing game? Do you feel comfortable saying that snapped Cade McNamara back into his efficient self, the level of efficiency we saw in the opener?
I mean, we're talking about a small number of throws here against a not very good team, so I don't want to jump to too many conclusions. I mean, obviously much improved in poor performance. And the thing that kind of jumps out to me so far is that, like, his deep ball has been on point. He just missed one to Cornelius Johnson before he hit the big one. And that was like, Seth and I were talking about this. It was like, it kind of seemed like Cornelius misjudged it and kind of broke stride. And otherwise that might've been on point too. So he had a couple of deep shots to Bell in the opener. He hits the 87 yarder here. Like, that might be all you need, right? Mm-hmm. Like, with this ground game, I mean, that if he can take the top off the defense a couple of times a game, then you don't need a whole lot more from him. And, you know, in this game, he's like dumping off the 5 yard out to Baldwin on the first play, and he turns that into 20 yards. So this is more, I think, opponent based than the ground game. Cause, you know, when you run a run play, if one guy screws up, you get an unblocked guy right to the running back. And in the passing game, you know, if they're playing super soft coverage and you know what's coming and they're just trying to keep it in front of you, that's a little bit harder to get a read on, like, how this is going to be against real competition.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect that's one of the concern, you know, if there is a concern, it's, you know, has Michigan played against a competent team against the run game yet? And it's fair to look at the opponents and decide, well, maybe not. And the question is, when they do play against such a team, how will the pass game go? Will they be able to push the safeties off the line of scrimmage so that they can reestablish some running? I will say one thing. My favorite play in this game was probably not one anyone noticed, but it was the second series. They're at about the NIU 20-yard line. It's first and 10, and Michigan goes into a 2x2 formation, and then they put Corum out on the wing, and the two on the left side, the two wide receivers create some space by running a mid-level route, and then they throw the ball behind Corum for about 5 yards, but then Corum breaks it for an additional, I don't know, 7-8 yards for about a 13-yard gain, which is a great gain at that spot in the field in particular. That's Bud Grant and Jerry Burns. So I'm giving Dave Abloff credit for that one, because that's what I've been screaming about for years, running some of the old Vikings ideas, because that's right out of the old Minnesota Vikings playbook. It's the, sort of the response to old West Coast offense, where they'd have Roger Craig, you know, clearing space for Jerry Rice. In this case, you had the two wide receivers clearing space for the running back. I was jumping up and down screaming, yes, yes, when that happened. And so Dave Abloff, you get credit for that one, because I'm sure that's where that play came from.
That's, that's another, I think, an opponent thing, because they played their cornerbacks way off all game.
Way off, yeah. They were,
and that's
soft.
What NIU has to do, because they were so out-talented in the secondary. And then, like, they had this one safety who was wearing number 6, and I was just like, that's appropriate, because every single time he gets matched on somebody at 6. So, like, yeah.
It may be, and I agree with you guys, look, this was an opponent you knew you could fatten up on, right? You knew you could work on some things and instill some confidence. And I'm always careful when I say that, or at least I say always, as I've been saying that the last couple of weeks about confidence in the passing game, it's not to me necessarily about, you know, Cade losing confidence, but not letting Washington become a thing for him, not letting it become a thing for how they view him. I think to snap right back, get a good taste in his mouth was important in that regard. But it's another reason it's important. And I wonder what you guys think about this, because I got a question in the stream about, hey, do you think JJ is going to be the starting quarterback by the end of the season? Ira asked me that in the pregame, and I initially answered it one way and came back and said, I think he will be more involved by the end of the season. And this is where I think it's important to make Cade completely confident, secure, you know, certain in his role, so you can incorporate JJ some more, because he could just do some things that can help him right now. And I'm curious if you think that you guys think that's possible. Can you inject JJ more into the equation without disrupting anything Cade has going on as far as his psyche, confidence, and swagger is concerned?
Yeah,
I mean, that's go ahead.
Okay. You know, I just go back to the play that Craig was talking about as a good example, because that one put the running back way out there. And usually when you stick the running back out there, that's just to get a guy away, right? Like, get your linebacker away from my formation, then I'm going to do something cool. And to be able to throw that out there, that ball from Cade takes a little while to get out there. Now, against NIU, you can take a while to get out there because they're going to take a while to get there. But against, you know, Wisconsin or somebody more competent, actually, yeah, Rutgers actually has some decent corners. Like, if they're allowed to play this week, I don't know if all the decent corners got arrested this week. Anyway,
well, we know one is out. Right?
Yeah, but like when you get decent corners, you're going to need to put some zip on that ball. But that's the kind of thing that, like, if Michigan has it in the offense, you have to be prepared for it, and McCarthy throws such a better ball. It's just as far, plain speed. Like, that thing gets out there quickly. And every half second that ball is, you know, gets there already and Corum's already caught it, there's another half second you have to be gathering Corum in space. So, like, that is a lot. There's a lot of Michigan's offense on the edges that right now opponents are just taking away because, you know, the ball is going to take so long to get there if McCarthy has to throw very far sideways, or McNamara has to throw very far sideways, and he doesn't have that zip. But you can still have that in the offense, and you can still make defense prepare for it if you can bring in McCarthy and have him make some of those throws. As far as grading, though, McNamara graded out way better than McCarthy both games that both of them played. So I don't want to.
That's kind of the point. He's the McNamara is the start. Cade's the starter.
Yeah.
There's no talk of that not being the case. You know, he would have to go out and play poorly to lose the job. They aren't looking to displace him. My question is, do you guys think it is achievable, that it's reasonable to say that you could inject more JJ into the equation as the season goes on without it becoming this controversy thing, this controversial thing, and this quarterback battle? And
I mean, in a word, no. Huh. Right? Like, we saw this script before with Brady and Henson.
Yeah.
And like, even like 23 years into Brady's career, there's this like, oh yeah, he didn't even start at Michigan, which is not true. but people are still like, oh yeah, that's what happened. And it's just, people will get it into their head. And like, you know what you saw from McCarthy when he pulled and ran, that's an element that I don't know if McNamara brings, and that's something that it can be really important in football right now. But also, you know, you're only throwing the ball like 11 times a game. Like, I don't know. Like, if we're talking about getting a quarterback into rhythm, making him comfortable, and getting him to a place where you're going into big games against Wisconsin, Penn State, Michigan State, Ohio State at the best place he can be, I don't know if there's a whole lot of room given the way this offense operates. Like, I think McNamara needs the reps, and he needs every throw he can get against live competition.
I mean, I still think you can give McCarthy a series, and like they did this in the past with backups. They're handing off anyway. It's not like he's getting. How many reps would he get on a 6-play drive right after the half?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know I don't know. It just feels like, you know, have I ever seen that work anywhere?
And Florida under Urban Meyer.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is one. That's true.
Yeah, and those are quarterbacks with different skills, and that makes, if you have it in there, if you're showing him one drive a game or two drives a game, that makes the defense have to prepare for it. And I mean, that's a role without undermining McNamara.
I mean, Oklahoma had it as well when they had the belldozer. They had like they had their goal to go quarterback. So like, but the Tebow was like that, right? Tebow brings a unique running ability that means that you pretty much got to play him because third and short exists.
We've got one of those.
You know, it's a good question, though. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is Brady and Henson, of course, which I don't think was really comfortable for Michigan and never really worked out for either one of those guys and or the team. But this is a little different because Brady and Henson were both essentially drop back quarterbacks with strong arms. Here you've got one guy who does have a stronger arm than the other, I think it's fair to say. And that guy also can run read options. You know, and so there's a greater ceiling with that guy. But the other guy is playing great and is managing and organizing the offense in a better, you know, a remarkably good way. And so, I mean, I think you have to stay with that guy. And I tend to agree with Brian that as soon as you start muddling it, you end up with the worst of all worlds as opposed to the best. So it is a fair, difficult question, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are going to keep asking it, too. That's the best we could do for now is wait and see. I just something tells me that if they can just make him feel secure, you watch him pull that and almost score the touchdown. I mean, you know, not Lamar Jackson by any stretch, but he certainly gives them more of a threat at that position on plays like that. So pretty enticing just to get a little bit of that on a game-by-game basis. We got to get to a break. We'll come back on the other side. More MGO Blog Roundtable. Get deeper into Rutgers. Talk about the Big Ten. Yeah, man, turmoil down in Ohio? We hope, right? We hope it's pandemonium. We hope the guy, the coaches are ready to fight. I hope. Of course, Michigan State looks pretty good. Penn State looks pretty good. Iowa looks pretty good. Indiana looks terrible. Got a lot to talk about on the other side here. MGO Blog Roundtable, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket.
Maybe Michael Penix has been talking to Vance Bedford or needs to talk to Vance Bedford. You guys are good. I don't know.
Yeah, the Manny Diaz is in real trouble.
Yeah.
He's losing to Michigan State. It's kind of like the thing that officially puts you on the hot seat. Michigan State actually looks decent.
I feel like I always have to be so nice to Michigan State and not share my opinions on State when I think that they're looking better than they are. I mean, the running back is for real.
Kenneth
Walker is great. I can't believe Wake Forest is only handing the ball to him half the time.
Wake Forest?
Yeah.
That's where they got him from, yeah.
Yeah, he's terrific. I mean, they really found a guy with that guy.
Yeah, but his blocking has not been... PFF like put one of their guards the number one guard in the country, and I'm like, no, something's wrong there.
Yeah, I mean their quarterback is pedestrian. He's not terrible. He's not great.
State fans are mad that he's not one of the top three quarterbacks in the Big Ten in the in the latest rankings.
I don't know what's going on. Hey, I got a question for you guys. I asked Brian this the other night at dinner. I looked at all the schedules, and Michigan plays at East Lansing this year, of course, and at East Lansing next year again.
They haven't updated the schedules yet.
Yeah.
They haven't updated it.
So that isn't true?
They're going to flip that. They just haven't updated the 21 and beyond schedule to reflect.
Okay, because it's on the Michigan State schedule. It's on the Michigan schedule.
Indiana game as well, if you notice that. They haven't fixed the flip yet.
I feel
they haven't gotten the new Big Ten schedules yet. Right. If you remember, they didn't get the Big Ten schedule this year until, like, I think mid-August. And that messed with nobody saw this in Hail to the Victors. Nobody pointed it out. But the teams
I saw it in Hail to the Victors and went crazy. And
he mentioned it.
What kind of a trade is that?
No. The teams are not in the right order in the book.
Yeah.
Because they were in the order that they were originally in, and then Michigan State and Indiana got moved around, and then Rutgers got moved up, and it was a we didn't catch it before the went to print, so I just left it in there. But yeah, that's going to be fixed.
So a couple of questions. Where does Lane Kiffin end up?
Nebraska.
You think Lane Kiffin?
He's doing well at Ole Miss.
Yeah, I didn't think that he was in trouble.
I hear USC's open.
That would be hilarious. Will James Franklin really wind up out there at SC, you think?
No, this feels like a give me more contract security kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah, his personality fits better for USC than Penn State, but he's got a fine thing going at Penn State.
Yeah, I gotta give due credit, man. I thought, first of all, I thought he's
back on the radio about 30.
Yeah, I thought he was overrated as a coach, but turns out, maybe Wisconsin's a little more overrated. And then I think that he's going to be a distraction with the SC interests, and they go out and take care of Auburn. So maybe I'm the one wrong on James Franklin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I'm James Franklin, I might look at the USC situation and see that there's no Ohio State in that division and be like, maybe I'll do that.
Stand by.
MGo Blog Roundtable, Brian Cook, Seth Fisher, Craig Ross. So, guys, let's talk about Rutgers. Let's talk about the Scarlet Knights under Greg Schiano. They aren't your, basic old school doormat Rutgers that we're used to. They seem to be decent. They're not even decent.
I would say that they have gotten up to being bad Rutgers. They are not like putrescent Rutgers. They have gotten to the level of the worst Big Ten team, which is a very good place to be for Rutgers.
Hey, Seth, do you remember how many yards Noah Vedral threw against Michigan last year?
Was it 450 or something?
It was 381.
Okay.
So let's slow our roll here. I forgot this, but that was a triple overtime game last year.
Yeah.
that was our biggest win of the year. 48-42 in triple overtime.
So we can show progress against this team. That's like we can walk into this game against Rutgers and walk out victorious in fewer than three overtimes and be like, you know what? That was better than last year.
Absolutely. Perspective is key. But if Michigan, looking at what they are over what we think they are after three games, is this a team that they dominate? Or is this a game in the second half?
Well, this is a very bad offensive team, at least as far as I can tell. Now, Brian's right. This isn't, 1 year Michigan beat them 78-0. And I remember that game quite well because we were in Stratford, Ontario, going to theater. And the first series didn't go well for Michigan. And I'm sitting in a bar across the street from the Avon Theater. And a guy at the bar said, Michigan's no good. I think Rutgers is going to beat them. And I said, okay, how much you want to put on that? And he goes, well, how many points will you give me? I said, 30. He said, okay, deal, $10 bet. So I go across the street, watch the play, come back across the street. I look at the score. It's 78-0 near the end of the game. And the guy has disappeared and didn't give me my 10 bucks. So I remember. That's what I remember about that game. But they're not. This Rutgers team is better than that Rutgers team. But I watched, and I think Seth did too. Them play Syracuse. They played them at Syracuse. This was their toughest opponent so far because they beat Temple 61-14 when Temple turned it over five times. And they beat Delaware by 32, and I don't think Delaware's division or is FBS. And they did not play well against Syracuse. They won 17-7. They couldn't really move the ball. But defensively, they did show something. Now, I'm not saying Syracuse is any good, but I do believe their offense is pretty bad. They don't throw it down the field. They try and throw 2 and 3 yard passes short of the linebackers and hope the receiver can get some yards after the catch. But they only gained 195 yards against Syracuse. I think it was about 55 on the ground. They don't really have a dynamic running game. They can't really seem to stretch the field. So I think it's not a very good offense. But defensively, they are competent. Although in this game, as Seth pointed out, they have two defensive backs suspended, at least as of yesterday they did, including, I think, their best corner, who probably will not play because as of Wednesday night, he was in jail. So that, in any event, that's what I see with Rutgers.
I need to get Mark D'Antonio out there to fix that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, maybe if Mark D'Antonio is the coach, provided they were out of jail. They could go from the jail to the game field. But
they call that Mark D'Antonio's taxi service.
Yeah, this should be not take it for granted. But if this offensive line, I think that's maybe the easiest thing to project translating exactly like we've seen it translating the Big Ten play exactly as we saw it during the non-conference. And if that being the case, I just think that this should be a comfortable game. Maybe it'll be a game, heading into the break. Hope that isn't the case, but I think that Michigan is gonna win this game comfortably. You look across the way and you watch this Wisconsin Notre Dame game, and I hope this is a real game. I hope that Notre Dame don't find me rooting for the Irish, but I hope they really kind of take it to Wisconsin, a team that there was a lot of talk about, guys, being advanced in their passing attack. Graham Mertz year two, more skill position talent around him. And I don't know. It feels like we were sold a bill of goods on that.
Well, if we were, then Wisconsin certainly was too, because the starting quarterback for Notre Dame is a former Wisconsin quarterback who's playing a lot better than Graham Mertz. So what's the deal there? I don't know. Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame has not really impressed this year. I mean, they have issues, I think, particularly in their back seven. And, I don't know that – I really don't know what to expect in this game because, Wisconsin obviously played pretty poorly against Penn State. They have quarterback issues. Neither team has really impressed so far.
Well, Notre Dame should have lost and really should have lost to Toledo.
And that Florida State game now just looks so much worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Florida State's terrible. And and the Toledo game, Toledo was, I think, down a point or two with about a minute and 20 to go. And the quarterback ran the ball in for a touchdown. He could have taken a knee on the 2-yard line. Toledo could have run the clock out and kicked a 20-yard field goal to win. Instead, he scored the touchdown, and then Notre Dame came down to score a last-second touchdown with, a minute left on the clock. So the Toledo quarterback made a major bonehead mistake because Toledo really had won that game. But Notre Dame is not playing well.
Yeah.
Wisconsin, I don't know. Penn State might be really good. I mean, that's the other part of this equation. I mean, Penn State, it looks like they could be definitely could be a real team. And so that may not be that much of a surprise. Yeah. In fact, right now, Penn State might be the best team in the Big Ten. It's certainly possible.
I don't disagree with that, but you're supposed to be this advanced offense. It's supposed to be the best quarterback you've had at Wisconsin, and you score 7 points at home.
Yeah.
7 points. I mean, Penn State's good, but I think that says more about Wisconsin than Penn State person.
This is not coming from nowhere. I mean, if you watched any Graham Mertz games after Illinois, like the one team that you should not absolutely grade somebody against, even against Michigan, he was, 12 of 22 for, 127 mm-hmm. yards? Like, they were not relying on Graham Mertz to beat Michigan. It was their line that was dominating us and their defense that was dominating us. He did not have a good game against Northwestern. He did fine against Indiana, but then, regressed again against Iowa and had a terrible game against Minnesota and had a terrible game against Wake. So, you look at the body of work after the Illinois game, and he only had, I think, 3 touchdowns the whole rest of the season last year. And this year, they haven't been really relying on him. So, I mean, part of that's his receivers. I don't think Wisconsin has anybody that really is going to, burn you. I think that it might be a game, famous last words, but it might be a game that Vincent Gray can hang again. Mm-hmm. And, it's their tight end, Ferguson, who's, the real passing danger.
Well, and
still Ferguson? How's that? How long has that guy been in college?
It's as long as his grandfather's been in charge of. Remember, it's Barry Alvarez's grandson.
Is that
so he's got unlimited eligibility?
Is that the one with 9 fingers still? Am I crazy?
Seriously, he has 9 fingers.
I know. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. I knew
he had 9 fingers and 2 thumbs. So, are you saying 9 fingers and 2 thumbs?
Oh no, that was Troy Fumagalli. My bad.
Yeah, okay. No. I mean, he is still Fumagalli, right? The Wisconsin tight end is always the same guy, no matter what his name is. And they just keep on cloning him and then putting a new name on him, just like their offensive line. And
the other thing about Wisconsin is they don't really have a dynamic running back, and that's You know, for years now, they've just pumped out really nice, tough, fast running backs, and this year, not so much. I don't see it.
They've got a guy literally named Cheese. I mean, how is Wisconsin not doing it with a guy named Cheese?
Yeah, Berger was supposed to be the dude. I mean, they talked up their skill talent like it was going to be, this is the crew. They're going to be a juggernaut. Unfortunately, they might look like that against Notre Dame because their defense is just porous to say the least. Surprising that Purdue wasn't able to muster more. Just a challenging, just push Wisconsin to the hilt. That'd be good for Michigan heading into to next week's affair over there at Madison. What do you guys make of Michigan State? You know, I admit to thinking that taking, you know, basically his whole team is transfers. He took like 57 transfers in the offseason. And how are you going to piece that together when all those guys come in with expectations to be more than what they were, where they were coming from? It seemed a bit of a stretch, but so far so good for Mel Tucker and company. They go down to Miami and get that game and put Manny Diaz on the hot seat. What do you think of the Spartans?
Well, I mean, they're clearly coming in a little bit better than people expected. I mean, you watch that Miami team and it's like, good God, what are you guys doing? Mm-hmm. Like, I saw a theory online that the turnover chain ruined their defense because now all they do is go for like big hits and nobody wraps up. And it kind of felt like that watching the game. And then, you know, Northwestern is terrible. So, yeah, I think that they're above expectation levels, but I'm still like withholding judgment a little bit, just like I am for Michigan, right? Like, you know, I don't want to get ahead of myself because I don't think Washington's all that good, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, they've performed. And, you know, they still have Naylor. They still have Jaden Reed. So they have a couple of skill position players who seem pretty solid to go with Walker. I'm just skeptical that offensive line can come that far in a single year. Especially with all the COVID stuff going on. So I kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop there.
Yeah. I mean, I think those are fair comments. I mean, Michigan, if you watch them, you'd say, man, this team is just really cooking. On the other hand, you have to have a little footnote vis-a-vis the level of competition. Well, more so with Michigan State. I mean, Youngstown State is not an FBS school and they're FCS and they're not even any good there. You know,
don't believe in Bo Pelini.
Yeah. And Miami is terrible. I mean, that's a bad football team. They beat App State at the buzzer in the prior week at Miami. And who else did they play? Oh, Northwestern, who lost to Duke this week. So the competition level at Michigan State has been very poor. On the other hand, you know, they have looked pretty good. So I think it's sort of a lot like Michigan in wait and see mode. Let's see how they, you know, how they do. But State schedule is a lot easier coming into the Michigan State game than is Michigan's. That's for sure.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah. Kenneth Walker, though, you guys think Kenneth Walker is for real?
Yeah, he's for real. I mean, he's for real against the competition he's faced. You know, Brian made a good point about how Miami safeties really just want to hit somebody, and that is, you know, money for a running back. So, and then Youngstown State guys, like, you know, that's hard to gauge against them. Northwestern, they lost everybody in their secondary, but, like, he did it to a couple of their guys. They had that one linebacker, I think Gallagher is his name, that he did it to at one point. So I think Walker's legit. He just hasn't, we haven't seen enough of it to gauge it, but I mean,
yeah, I mean, like, I think he's a legit good Big Ten back. The current, like, trajectory for him is, like, best running back in the country. And I kind of feel like if that seems unlikely, right? Because he was at Wake Forest, and Wake Forest was like, we'll give you some of the carries. So it kind of feels like
why wasn't he like the man there?
My suggestion is that he's probably on a hot streak right now, has played some teams that aren't very good, and will probably come back to earth a little bit. But, yeah, he's a good Big Ten back. He's probably the best running back they've had in a minute, so that improves them a lot.
All right, so let's close things out talking about what might be turmoil, what I hope is turmoil down in Columbus.
Nah, they're fine.
I mean, essentially,
they're doing fine.
Ryan Day told – Kerry Combs go sit in the corner during games. I mean, what does Kerry Combs do during games now?
Recruit.
He just has no role. And Ryan Day is putting it out there for everyone to see. I mean, to see a coach emasculate one of his own coaches. I mean, they rarely do that to opposing coaches, but he's like putting it out there for everyone to see. This dude is a bum. It's his fault. He's not going to have anything to do with us anymore. We're going to work around him the rest of the season. Do you think that that is going to be even more disruptive to what is already a bad defense?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's talking about Kerry Combs like we talk about John Donovan, right? That's
not good. He is, though, right?
Well, and I think that like the Ohio State fan base sort of plays into that, right? Because they lose this game and it's like panic at the disco, and you gotta like point at someone, and they're the witch. But like, you know, you put that guy in charge of the defense, so you know that finger points back at you. I think they've got some experienced guys there, Larry Johnson. They have various other coaches who can like take over, but.
Al Washington.
It's never good to like get into a season and be like, none of this works and we need to change. So I was reading Ross Fulton stuff, and it's like one of the things that's different is that Ohio State is now running a gap sound run defense, which is like, oh, I didn't know you installed ones that weren't gap sound. So I feel like, unfortunately for Michigan, they got to wait a long time, and there's probably going to be some stabilization there. Because like they got analysts and they got everybody coming out the areas. They're going to figure some stuff out. They're going to improve.
See, but the analyst that is not calling plays or probably is calling plays, his last defense was at Arizona, Paul Rhodes. Like, that's not like, is that
well,
the answer?
I don't know. Like, I just feel like they've got like a crew working on it. And whatever it is right now, they're going to be able to fix some things. Probably not all the things. And then it's like, is CJ Stroud hurt? Is that the reason that he's been a little up and down, or is that just his reality right now? And I don't know.
I mean, they still have Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson to take the top off. So right. Give them 21 points to start this. Every exactly. single game. If you're tied with them at the end of the third quarter, you're done. And that's been every one of their games. One thing that they weren't doing is very fixable, which is having the cornerbacks replace when the safeties get cracked. And Oregon did that to them, and then it still wasn't fixed. And I think that's why they kind of narrowed in on Kerry Combs, because like his cornerbacks have been awful at that. And it's not the first time we've heard this. His cornerbacks go to the NFL, and then their NFL coaches are like, who the hell was coaching you in college, man?
Well, even with Combs having the Paterno headset that's not plugged into anything, like last week they gave up 400 passing yards to Tulsa,
and Tulsa's terrible, incidentally.
Hey,
they're terrible. They can't beat anyone.
How uncomfortable is that for Kerry? Everyone knows, dude. You aren't doing anything.
It probably like, looks at his paycheck there. And it's like, all right.
Yeah, you're just a spectator at the game. Like, what does he do at practice? Like,
he recruits.
You have no role.
He recruits. I think Brian's got a point about, like, let's not treat Ohio State like they're a college football team. So, like, this is these are NFL issues that go on, right? Like, okay, we're going to put this coach aside, but everyone there is professional. Everyone there is on the same page to a degree. Combs is going to get his paycheck. He's going to do his recruiting, and then they're going to move on to another Kerry Combs who's good at recruiting until that guy moves up too far that you have to replace him, because that's what happens, right? You get a guy who's an awesome recruiter. They keep him around until they have to give him a position above his his Peters principal level, and then you have to jettison that guy and you get somebody else that's really good guy. So Iowa State's going to be fine. I think Brian's right that they're going to have a lot of their issues fixed. Let's not pretend that they're a college football team.
So I agree that they aren't your run-of-the-mill college. I agree with your earlier point that Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, their skill talent, they still have some of the most explosive skill talent in the country. And so their defense can be a sieve and make a steal, win the Big Ten. I'm not suggesting otherwise. I just think that if you that defense, you're going to be able to – Michigan, with what they do, I think they'll be able to do to that defense what Minnesota was doing. And that sometimes might be your best defense against that offense. Can you keep it off the field? And I think that recipe – could still be effective down the line. Cause I don't see anyone slowing that. Only thing that's going to slow that Ohio State offense down is injury. I don't see anyone in the Big Ten that's going
to
slow them down.
It's going to have to be a 2011 game. It's going to have to be Michigan playing out of their minds on offense. It's going to have to be Stroud missing his open receivers downfield a few times, and then some great play at the end to end it. Like, Ohio State is going to bring it for Michigan. They're going to have us scouted to death. They have the talent to take away some of the things that we've been doing to teams that don't have the talent to stop us. And, you know, McNamara or McCarthy by then, I don't know, will have to have that kind of game.
A split zone, a basic McNamara. Split zone. I mean, I shouldn't say like it's this easy thing to do, but man, I mean, split zone, bluff off of it. They could not figure it out. I was about to cuss on the air. They couldn't figure it out. I was like, man, these dudes are terrible. They're worse than they were last year. Which I didn't think was possible for a team with that much talent. I didn't think was possible, and they are. So,
well, it sure seems like Michigan is closer to them right now.
I don't even want to
get the case in a while. Now that's a low bar.
Everybody's running at the football. I'm not going to run at the football yet. Lucy's holding the football, and I'm like, I'm waiting.
I understand.
I understand. Michigan, keep in mind, too, Ohio State's going to be gunning for us because they know as well as we do that Dan Villari would have beaten them last year, and they want revenge.
Well, it might be their season. I see Ohio State losing another game at some point, you know, that not necessarily Michigan, but that kind of defense, man. There's going to be something that happens during the year where you aren't on offensively every game, an injury, an off game.
Like, yeah, we're not getting their off game. We are not going to get their off game, period.
Yeah, Michigan isn't.
No, we're going to, it's going to be at Columbus. It's going to be their season. Like, we're going to get their best.
All right, so winner score real quick. Michigan Rutgers, winner score. Brian.
I just want to say the game's at home, Seth. I think Michigan wins 45-6.
All right.
38-9, Michigan.
And Seth?
50-10.
All right, I love it. Yeah, let's get some light work heading into Camp Randall, where Ira just reminded me they haven't won since 2001. Gotta be kidding me.
Well, how many times have we played there since 2001? 4 or 5 times, maybe.
Yeah, that's still a lot.
That's still a lot. But, right.
But it's not like we're playing there every other year.
Right. All right, fellas, another good one in the books. Appreciate you as always. Great to have the band back together. We'll see the rest of you tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK of the Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
I'm Ringo.